And good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. We're glad to have you with us. It's the first Wednesday of the month and has been our great pleasure for a long time here on the show, first Wednesday, 10 o'clock show, to talk about food and cooking with the man that we like to call our chef in residence. He's laughing.
I've been residing for so long, yes.
It's true. He's been residing for quite a while now. We've been doing this program for eons, and it's always fun when he is here because we get a chance to exchange stories and recipes and cooking tips and just really enjoy food for the great pleasure it brings and how it brings people together and how important it is for families and family traditions. And we've talked about different kinds of dishes and different approaches to making things. And every once in a while, there's been a particular dish. And it's one of those things where everybody has his or her own version of this thing. They make it a particular way. They really like it. Maybe they think that's the best way that there is to make that thing.
No question.
So we talked about different sorts of things. And this time around, he said he would like to talk about macaroni and cheese. And as I've said here a couple times, if you ask people to list what are their great comfort foods, well, you know that's going to be on the top 10 list of comfort foods for a lot of folks, macaroni and cheese. And it's not exactly complicated. And, you know, you can purchase a cardboard box with the ingredients
if
and you can make it that way if you have to. But the point is here, it's so much better if you make it yourself. And it is one of those things where people have secrets. There's some wrinkle in the way that they do it, something that's special that they really think is good. So he says he thinks he has found the grail of macaroni and cheese. And so he'll tell us about that. But he's, as always here on the show, what he's wanting to do is to hear from you. He'd like to know, okay, well, how do you make macaroni and cheese? Is there something about it that's special that makes yours different and makes yours
wonderful?
Wonderful. That's the thing. So we'd like to collect some recipes, and you can call in and give us a recipe. You can just call in to say hello. You could call in to ask questions. We have in the past done a little troubleshooting there. Occasionally somebody has called in and said, look, I'm trying to do this and it's just not working. And what do you think is the problem? We've done that sort of thing. Any and all of that is welcome. If you're in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455 is the number. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. And if you want to send us an email, well, you can do that too. And it's will-talk@illinois.edu. Okay, so macaroni and cheese.
Macaroni and cheese.
Macaroni and cheese.
We had a big program some time ago, but and I've been fighting with this idea, or not idea, but fighting with this making macaroni and cheese. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. And I've got 40 recipes, and they're all fairly similar, but there are differences in them. So I know that these differences are what make up the program. What I'm trying to do, and as I said, it may be too late. My taste buds may have changed. What I'm trying to do is to get what it was that I enjoyed so much as a child, mm-hmm. that my mother made, and it couldn't have been complicated, as I've told you. My mother was not the world's greatest cook. She tolerated cooking, and she did it straightforward, and it was good. And I never even thought about complaining about it. You didn't complain. There was always food on the table, and I loved her macaroni and cheese. And I do know that she used Colby because in those days there wasn't anything else. Mm-hmm. You just rat cheese was it, Colby Longhorn, and it took me a long time to understand. I never did understand why they called it Colby Longhorn, but I think it's because it came in a long tube shape, like a long, and it was wider at one end than it was at the other, sort of a cone, and so it would be in the markets as a great big huge round of cheese, not I mean, by round, I mean, well, it was only about 7 or 8 inches in diameter, but it would be about 2 feet long. And so it was called Colby Longhorn.
See, this was a cheese that my mother liked. That was something that she always bought and ate and liked. And the thing that I remember was that as it was, at that point, it was a packaged product. You went to the store, it was wrapped in plastic and it was all sealed up. But that it was
half moon.
It was half moon.
It was a half moon.
Yes.
Well, it was a half of a round.
Oh, okay.
So they would cut a big slab off of it and then cut that in half and package it up. And it was always sold in that way. It was a half a round. Mm-hmm. And in some places it still is. In town you can get some square bars of Colby, but anyway, I tried to make it and we had this some time ago we talked about making macaroni and cheese. Everyone talks about it, and Bobby Flay is doing it and there's a woman in New York City who's supposed to make the best. I watch those programs and I say, well, I don't see it, because I would then try to make it and it would be tough. It was tough, and it wasn't unctuous. That good. You'd eat it. It wasn't pleasing. Now, I did go through a period a long, long, long time ago when they just first brought out macaroni and cheese in the blue box that Alton Brown likes to fuss about, and I remember tolerating that, but not really enjoying it, and I wanted to get back to the right stuff. So I have manufactured over and over and over and over, and I'm sorry, I throw half of it out because I make it and it isn't good, and I keep saying, what on earth is it not good? This is all good stuff you're putting in it. So last week on the television, of course, of which I'm watching all the time, there was a program. I think there's a new series program called "It's Either Cheesehead or something like that." About a guy. It's all cheese. Everything is cheese. He was in Wisconsin, and he said, "Oh boy, tonight we're going to make macaroni and cheese." And I thought, "Ooh, tune into this. What is it he's going to do?" And then, still in the back of my mind, I keep imagining a sauce that would work for this. And strangely enough, he hit on what I would call the secret of it. It was plain cream, and it was he made it in a I think both of them they made it for a single portion for people. Everything was always made from scratch, but it started out only as cream, and then you heat that up and you let it begin to reduce just a little bit, and then cheeses were put in it, and of course it was Wisconsin, so it was Wisconsin cheddar and a little bit of something that was very much like Parmesan ground, and so it was grated cheese and Parmesan and cream, and that's all there was in this dish. And then they made a fuss about getting the right macaroni with it, and they used something. Oh gosh, what was it called? Cantalini. I think it was called something like cantalini, which really is an elbow macaroni with one extra twist in it, which is kind of a funny thing. I've never confronted buying it, but two times it came up last week on television as the thing to use, because it twists around a little bit and it'll hold the sauces better. And it was simply the macaroni was cooked and placed in this cheese sauce, rather than a sauce with cheese in it, you know, rather than a bechamel with cheese in it, it was cream that the cheese became mixed up with. And of course, you have this it would be very rich and very, very delicious. And it was. And I would recommend putting 1 tablespoon of ballpark mustard in that. They didn't on the program, but one tablespoon of ballpark, not gray poupon and not grainy mustard, but old French ballpark mustard. And it is pretty good. And you can bake it quickly because everything is cooked and you just simply heat it up in the oven. And I put some panko breadcrumbs on the top, and I didn't put any butter on top of that. I thought there was enough in the cream. But, gee, was it – oh, did it taste good. It mm-hmm. tasted good. I almost made some for you today, but I thought, no, we won't do that. So I know that there are some little secrets like that I was surprised, but I wasn't. I was surprised, but I wasn't surprised. You know what I mean? I had anticipated that a less pasty sauce would do what I wanted to do, and then as soon as the guy put in just the cream, and of course even the announcer on the program said, "What? Just cream?" And he says, "That's all," and I thought, that's the answer that I'm looking for, okay. Anyway.
That's I guess this is not something that I've made, but I would have thought that what you do is you start out and you make a white sauce.
Yes.
And then you put
that's what I mean, a sauce with cheese
right,
in it.
Right.
Sort of a cheese-flavored sauce.
Yeah.
Well, this other one is a cheese sauce. It's so plain, but it doesn't get. I don't know. I've made bechamel sauces. I mean, that was the standard gravy for the house, was just, you know, sawmill gravy is a bechamel, and I've made that for years and years and years. And I know what I'm doing, and I know that you cook it. You have to cook it, or you get a floury taste. And you have to do this and do that, and put the milk in warm instead of cold, and all those sort of things. I know all those tricks, but still, that seemed to be too much, overpowering for the cheeses and the macaroni. But this one, it's loose. It isn't all gummy. It's loose, and so you have a real nice cheese sauce on the macaroni when you're eating it. So I got that far, and I would like to know what other people do, even if they do make it with a bechamel. Then what is it that they're doing that makes it something that they really enjoy?
Okay.
So that's my question for
today. There's the question. If you have the answer, call us. Here's the number. 333-9455 for Champagne Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. We also have email, so if you would like to send us an email, you can certainly do that. will-talk@illinois.edu. The man here with us this morning is the man we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore, and for a long time here has been with us once a month. It's always on the first Wednesday in the 10 o'clock hour. We've been doing these programs, pick some topic and kick it around a little bit, and it's exchange stories and recipes, and it's always fun when he is here. So if you want to talk about macaroni and cheese, that's what we're doing here this morning. In fact, we've got somebody here.
Yay, hooray.
All ready to go, and they're in Bloomington, Illinois. So we will talk with them. Line number one. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm a bacon now, but when I used to make macaroni and cheese, I would make it with Welsh rarebit.
Welsh rarebit?
Mm-hmm. The mustard added a very pleasant kick.
There is mustard in that, yes. Now, tell us more about it.
It's been 20 years.
Well?
And I don't really remember the details. I just turned to my Joy of Cooking cookbook, looked up Welsh rarebit. Cooked my pasta, stirred the two together.
And stirred the two. So you really were using kind of a rich cheese sauce to
mm-hmm.
So, well, this is what I just discovered, was that is what I like better than, well, as I say, I must fail in making a bechamel, and although I've used that 1,000 times in a lot of Julia Child's cooking, I make a lot of things that start with a bechamel, so I know how to make that, and I just find that I do not like that with the macaroni, and there's something about it, and so I keep trying to relive this childhood memory of what it was, and I think I've come very close to it. I believe Mother might have used evaporated milk because
that would add a good deal of richness.
Yes, it would.
It changed the flavor a bit.
And we always had it in the house. There was always evaporated milk in the house. So I know that it is possible that that's what she could have used too. So,
yeah.
But I think you got the right idea. You make a good rich cheese flavored sauce, and then it's just mixed with the macaroni. And then did you bake it?
Yeah. Oh boy, I think I did.
I think you probably baked it a little bit, and I doubt if you put breadcrumbs on top. That's more of a recent thing, especially with panko being available to put breadcrumbs on the top. But I remember little bubbles of brown on the top of it, where it would bubble up and then it would brown, and that would be it.
Yeah.
Well, good. I like that very much.
Yeah, I wish I could find something that was vegan that tasted like mac and cheese, but I haven't so far.
Well, that's good. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call. Other stories, questions, recipes, welcome 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. You can email also at will-talk@illinois.edu. So the idea that you put breadcrumbs, you put this in a casserole and you're going to bake it and you put breadcrumbs on the top, sort of a new...
It's more recent. It's not in the old recipes. It's more recent, especially, as I say, since people have begun to use panko. I mean, that's just burst into the... to it.
This is an excellent thing. If people have not used panko breadcrumbs, you must go to the store today and buy some panko. And however you use breadcrumbs, you use these, and you're going to like it a lot better. Especially if what you're doing is some kind of a topping for something.
You use it in making croquettes. We had a little cooking workshop at Japan House last night, and we made some croquettes, and they were covered with panko. Panko is a Japanese product. Its literal translation is bread ground up. it's not flour. Ko is often used as a word for flour. Panko. Pan is the comes from the French pain, the Japanese were very influenced by French cooking, and so that kind of bread was not a formal kind of bread. So pan, and then ko, the chopping up, the crumbs, crumbling, is where the word panko came from.
And the thing that, and I don't know how this stuff gets made, but the thing, when I look at them, it looks to me like almost like you had used a grater somehow.
It's coarser.
It's like shredded
somehow. It's heavier and coarser, and as a result, it doesn't stick together in a big glob. I mean, those little spikes, those little strings, they support one another, and you have this nice crust, and it browns very easily, and it's very good. You can deep fry things with it very easily, and of course I love it that in this last 2 years, 3 years. Food Channel has just been going crazy with panko, as though they had just invented it. And it's been around for quite a while, but only for people who were cooking Japanese-style foods. You had that panko was used a lot. And all of a sudden, it appeared on the shelf and people liked it.
Yeah, it's really, I have used it in things where I am doing baked fish and chicken breast.
Oh, yes,
So it's like, it's almost kind of like oven fried in,
yes,
in a
is.
Sense.
Yep.
And so you can take, for example, there's a thing that, a very, very, very simple tilapia that I've been doing for a long time, where basically you just take your tilapia fillet and you get some of that really coarsely ground Dijon mustard and you paint a little of that on the fish. And then you take your panko and what I do is I put in some herbs and a tiny bit of salt and some Parmesan cheese.
Uh-huh.
And I just recently now realized that also it's better if you toast it in a dry skillet a little bit first. You can get a little color on it.
Oh.
And then you take your crumbs and then you just pat that on top of your fish, put it in the oven. 13 minutes, you're done.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's really good. And that's something I've been, just a really easy thing that I've been doing for a long time and had done it for a long time with regular breadcrumbs. And then first time I tried it with panko, it's like, there's no going back.
Now, the regular breadcrumbs ends up almost being a cement around it. It clogs to it. And panko is a delight. It has a good, what's the right word, tongue.
Mouthfeel.
It has a mouthfeel that is different, and you enjoy it, and it's good. Yeah, panko's good.
It's a good thing. So go out and try those. Let's talk with somebody else here in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm calling to first of all to solve the mystery of the pasta type. It's called cavatappi.
Oh, cavatappi.
Yes, which is corkscrew.
Corkscrew
pasta, but I don't see it very often around here. I like it because sauces do.
I haven't seen it either, and I was surprised to see it twice last week on television. And that's why
they have it at World Harvest.
They might well. Yeah, they might well.
They have everything at World Harvest.
I don't know. Speaking of pastas, America Test Kitchen just recently made a pronunciamento about a brand called BioNutra. I think it's BioNutra.
What it is is
whole wheat, that's the best whole wheat one. In case you don't want to use a the white wheat.
Right. I like the.
Oh yes.
That I like. It has a really good wheat flavor.
I think that is the good brand. I think they had that at the Art Mart.
Early on.
Yeah.
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 I think they do.
Early on.
I wanted to also mention that of course now I'm going to forget her name, but Marcella Hazan's. Book. She has a very interesting chapter on pasta where she recommends which kind and shapes of pasta go with which sauces.
Isn't that a puzzle, though?
It is if you don't read the book.
You're right.
There are some traditional things, like with pesto, you have linguine, and with you have penne when you're doing all'arrabbiata.
Oh, yes.
And so there are some traditions, but fettuccine but they should be fresh if you're going to make Alfredo. So there are traditions, but I had a friend who could never figure it out, so I bought her that book for her birthday.
Oh, yes.
And she was so thrilled.
Oh, that that has always been a problem. I love going, let's see, where is it? Isn't it at Menichi's that there's a big poster out right inside the door with 225 shapes of pasta on it. So,
right, I don't know that I've seen it at Menichi's, but I have someplace seen that poster.
Somewhere, yeah. I think that's the last place I saw it. And you just sit there and you say, oh my gosh, you know, now what?
So many pastas in so little time.
Exactly, exactly. And then when you're making your own, of course, that's another treat to make your own. And now somewhere, let's see, what was it? I think it was maybe David Rocco made a strange pasta that really, really wasn't it was more of a pie dough, but chopped it up cut it up and used it as a pasta. And I think even had an Alfredo sauce on. See, that's some more information is that what I'm thinking of is almost close to an Alfredo.
Absolutely, because a real Alfredo, no matter what Olive Garden tells you, is not made with bechamel. It's made with a reduction of cream. And
yes, yes, yes. Thank you. I didn't know that, but I do now. And I'm not surprised. I'm delighted.
Yeah, well, that's good. Just back for a moment, and I'll get off. But my father had a favorite macaroni and cheese that he would try to get my mother to make. That is, to my mind, it's just what you don't want. But he liked it best. But I think it's because his grandmother, not a notable cook, used to make it that way.
Yes.
And it was just, you cooked your pasta, and you pour hot milk on it, and then you chunk up your Colby Longhorn.
All right.
Just kind of sprinkle it over the top and throw it in the oven. But it's kind of dry. And another thing is about some of these problems with the bechamel sauces, if they're overcooked, then they start solidifying and turning into more pasta.
Then that's why it gets sticky.
That's what I think.
Now tell me that other recipe again. The milk was heated up.
The milk was heated. You put your cooked macaroni in your dish. Then you pour over this hot milk, and then you just sprinkle some chunks half inch or so across the top. So essentially you just get kind of a soft pasta with cheese on the top. But my mom and I didn't like it, and so it was only on special occasions that she would make it for my dad.
I think that you have just given me the other clue, because I was speaking to David before. I said, my mother, I know she didn't grate cheese. You chopped it up. The Colby, you chopped up. You didn't grate it. Well, we didn't have a grater, was one reason. And it was chopped because I remember big chunks of cheese in it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you've answered.
You know what?
I bet you have just opened up another thing. I'll bet mother did use evaporated milk, and I'll bet she just stirred the cheese into it and let it do its own melting and cooking.
That sounds right to me.
I'm ready to try that one now.
Okay. Well, I hope you like it.
Thank you very, very much.
You don't get that unctuousness.
No. Well, no, and that's what I like. I wanted, right.
But I think people who prefer the bechamel route should just not cook it so long. Just cook it on high long enough to brown the top and get it the hell out of the oven.
Oh, yes. Okay, good. Then you've answered a problem. Good.
All right. Well, thank you. We're here talking this morning with the man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. Once a month, first Wednesday, we talk about food and always have a great time. And macaroni and cheese is the theme, and we'll talk some more after a short break. This is Focus.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by the Brown Bag Deli in downtown Monticello. Brown Bag Deli offers freshly made casual lunches and dinners, homemade pies by Inge, gourmet foods, and a wacky collection of unique cards and gifts. Brown Bag Deli encourages you to join them in supporting WILL.
This is Focus. It's our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. We are here weekday mornings from 10 until noon with different topics, 10 different topics every week. In the second hour today, a rather different take on food from somebody who has had lifelong serious food allergies. Sandra Beasley will be our guest. She is an award-winning poet and essayist. She has written a memoir about her experiences growing up with allergies. The title of her book is Don't Kill the Birthday Girl, Tales from an Allergic Life. She'll talk with us in the next part of the show. She's here visiting Champaign-Urbana and will be giving a reading this afternoon at the Illini Union Bookstore. Tomorrow morning at 10, our guest is Eric Kleinenberg. He's professor of sociology at New York University. We will talk about his recent book, which takes a look at the rise and surprising appeal of living alone. Going Solo is the title. And then also tomorrow we will have another in our series of conversations with candidates. The guest will be Congressman Tim Johnson. He is now running for his party's spot. He's a Republican running for his party's spot on the ballot in the new 13th congressional district. He now represents the 15th district. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon, 10 different topics for you every week. We welcome questions, comments. You can send us an email. You can go online and look at the schedule. A number of ways you can participate here. Check us out at will.illinois.edu. We're also on Twitter, Will Public Media, and we're also on Facebook. This morning, in this part of Focus, it's our monthly show on cooking. We've been doing it for a long time, first Wednesday of the month, 10 o'clock hour, with our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. He picks the topic, and it mysteriously arrives by messenger, and he says, okay, this is what I want to do. And often, it's something he's been making or has been thinking about, and he will share that. But he's also interested in what your take is on this thing. And that's why he said, well, he was looking for a certain taste, a certain something in macaroni and cheese, and he felt that he had found it, and he's happy with what he's got. But he's also interested in what other people do. You know, what is your secret? Maybe it's a particular approach to making the sauce. Maybe it is a particular kind of cheese that you put into it. You know, maybe it's a particular kind of pasta. You know, whatever it is, you can share it with us. 333-9455. And toll free, 800-222-9455. Now, I also want to acknowledge here, we got an email from someone who says, here are two favorite modifications for plain mac and cheese to become a one-pot meal, which would be add bacon or diced ham along with some fresh spinach or chard. And the other would be adding tuna and green peas. Now, to me, that sounds like we're getting perilously close to tuna casserole. But if that's what you like.
It'd be a cheesy tuna.
It would be
casserole.
Cheesy tuna casserole, yeah. Well, but, you know, okay.
I love invention.
Okay. Add a little color there. Yeah. All right. Fine. Let's talk with somebody else here. And I think we're getting somebody lined up on our line number one. Yes. Someone who's calling on a cell phone right here. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I was listening to the show on macaroni. Very interesting. My mom used to make it when I was a kid, and I never liked macaroni. And then... many years ago, my ex-mother-in-law made macaroni that I thought was spectacular. And I've been making her recipe for the last 35 years.
Yes, tell us about it.
It's basically, the most basic part of it is essentially three layers of cooked macaroni interleaved with three layers of sliced, and she specified pinconning medium. Well, pinconning... cheese is available all over the state of Michigan. It's essentially, from what I can see, a medium sharp cheddar.
Uh-huh.
And then at each of those layers, before you put the cheese on top of the layer of macaroni, you just put a few drops of Worcestershire sauce.
Oh.
And then bring all the way up to the three layers, and then you just dribble some milk in the side until you can just barely see the milk. In the dish when you tilt it to one side. So there's not very much milk at all. So what it makes is a drier macaroni. It's certainly not soupy in any way. But then to top it off, she basically browned pork chops and then laid the pork chops across the top.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
And then baked it all for about 45 minutes. Half the time covered, half the time uncovered. So what you get is actually a fairly subtle pork chop flavor in the macaroni, but the Worcestershire sauce and the other cheeses actually make a unique macaroni, and it's still
complimented
the only one I like to this day.
Well, that's very interesting because now you see this is without a white sauce, and so it's just layers of macaroni. Layers of macaroni and cheese and macaroni and cheese and Worcestershire sauce dropped in and then milk to rise up. And so the milk is going to sort of blend with those things as it cooks and then pork chops on top.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and you just lightly brown the pork chops before you put them across the top.
Right, yeah.
My daughter, who's now 21, she never liked macaroni when she was a kid, unlike most kids, except for, so to speak, my macaroni. and she loves it, absolutely loves it.
Well, good for you. I like learning about now we've got three people that have said, you just pour milk on it. I like that. That's answering some of my own concerns about that. I like that very much. Thank you.
You bet.
All right. Well, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, I got an email, and now you know how I hate controversy. I don't want to get any start any controversy here, but it was from someone who was listening to the conversation about panko breadcrumbs and has pointed me to the font of all knowledge. We'll bow now to Wikipedia. And now what Wiki says about panko is that it does not come from the French word pan for bread. It comes from the Portuguese word for bread. And that's where they learned, the Japanese first learned to make bread from the Portuguese.
Well, they did. Because
which would make sense because they were the ones who were in there.
I stand corrected, and I believe that very much because the Portuguese were very important in bringing sweets to Japan. They're the ones that brought sugar to Japan in the 16th century. And I didn't know the Portuguese word. I had just been told that it was the French word. But
Which would sound like a reasonable, you know, pan. Yeah.
Well,
you know, that's the French word for bread. And
yeah.
It's bread. And that's right. It is the word for bread, but it's the Portuguese word.
It's the Portuguese word. I like it. Yeah. Thank you.
Now here, this is also very interesting, which I did not know, that it says that panko is made from bread that is baked by passing an electric current through the dough. And one result of this is you get bread that doesn't have crust. And it has, according to Wiki, a crisper, airier texture than most types of breading found in Western cuisine, which is also very true. But that detail about how they actually so it's actually bread that is made
special in a special way.
So it's not just how they produce the
I knew you couldn't just take a bread and grind it up in the Cuisinart and make the same thing. I knew that it couldn't have been made that way. Okay, Portuguese. Well, the Portuguese were the first importers to Japan, and as I say, they were the ones that brought. So also I should have thought about that because the word for confiture, you know, a little sweet, whatever it is in. Now I forgot the Japanese word for kompeto. Kompeto is a little tiny sweet. Now that I'm thinking about a piece of panko blown up big is kompeto, and that's used in the Japanese tea ceremony, and it came from the Portuguese. I should have remembered all of that, but I had been told that it was the French word because the Japanese like French cooking very much, but it was the influence of Portugal. Good.
All right.
I stand
good.
Corrected.
You can learn stuff on
I'm
your show.
I'm sitting
Isn't
corrected,
just
rather.
Amazing. Yeah. And soon we'll be lying down corrected. 333-9455. Toll-free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. We have about 10, 12 minutes left. Well, maybe more like, 10 minutes. And this is our monthly cooking show. Doyne Moore is here, the man we like to call our chef in residence. And we're talking about macaroni and cheese. And I do think that it's funny that macaroni and cheese has become, this is not just a recent development, but maybe in the last few years, has become a gourmet item. And in fancy restaurants, they have macaroni and cheese. That they doll it up. I'm not exactly sure what the big, maybe it's fancy cheese or maybe it's just about presentation. I don't know, but you can go to really upscale places and have macaroni and cheese.
Yeah. I want to say traditionally, we think of macaroni and cheese as a Southern dish. And it confuses me because I don't know exactly what source of cheeses the South has because all the cheeses come from Wisconsin, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But you can go into any cafeteria in the South or families are always cooking macaroni and cheese, but it's also cooked in the North. But the South gets the raves for it.
Really?
You know.
Hmm. Okay. Let's talk with somebody else here on a cell phone. Line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'm kind of coming in at the end of your show, so you may have already covered this. We enjoy the recipe of the Emeril Lagasse recipe for mac and cheese.
Oh, tell us about it.
From his recipes of cooking with kids, and it's I remember it offhand, but it has evaporated milk, Monterey Jack, Parmesan, cheddar, eggs, a little bit of garlic, cayenne, and bacon. And when you assemble it, it cooks for like 10 minutes at 400, 425. It's easy. It's creamy. You can adjust the flavors a little bit.
And your kids are okay with the fact that it's got cayenne in it?
I adjusted a bit. but it makes the cheese flavor kind of come through the way nutmeg does in some of the cream sauces.
I think that is an important thing because cheese by itself, some cheeses are very strong in flavor, but then the adding of this cayenne is very much like my recommendation of putting ballpark mustard in it. So that little sharpness behind it sort of boosts that flavor.
Yeah, I often put dry mustard in a little bit.
Oh, yes, dry mustard would work, wouldn't it? But you're using evaporated milk. I like that.
Yes, and eggs, quite a few eggs. But like I said, I can't remember off the top of my head.
And eggs. Oh, my. Mm-hmm. That's an elaborate.
Well, it sounds elaborate, but it cooking the pasta is what takes the longest.
Yes,
actually,
8 minutes.
Yeah, and by then you have everything.
Everything else is done. I'll look up Emeril, and that's cooking with children, is it?
I think it's one of his cooking with kids recipes or something.
Kids, yes.
Mac and cheese should pull it up and. I was surprised that it cooked for such a short time, and it's absolutely perfect.
Well, I was surprised that I too was surprised when I made this the other night, and it was only in the oven for 30 minutes until it was bubbling and brown. And I said, Well, that's it. That's all it took was only 30 minutes in the oven. So
now this is 10 to 12 minutes.
Oh, goodness.
Yes. So I can't remember if it's 400 or
400, okay.
It's really high heat.
400, yes.
Yeah, never seen anything burnt.
It heated up and you ate it. That was good.
That's right.
I like that. Well, thank you very much. That gives me some more information. Good, thank you.
Well, thank you. And, of course, he would put garlic and bacon in it. I mean, it is Emeril Lagasse we're talking about here.
Pork rules.
Yeah, exactly. It's a pork fat thing. Now I have found a recipe here. Just put in his name and mac and cheese, and there is a recipe here. This is macaroni with four cheeses, so maybe this is slightly different, and it's on the Food Network. It's on their website, and it indeed has half and half, and it does have some white pepper. It has some hot sauce. It has Reggiano, cheddar, Fontina, and Gruyere. And it uses elbow macaroni, and it does indeed have garlic, and it uses his seasoning blend, his essence blend. But there's no meat in this. There's no bacon in this, and there are no eggs in it. So maybe the recipe that he has a couple of different ways to do it. But this sounds like it's slightly similar kind of approach. And it also doesn't look like it bakes so at such a high heat. But anyway, that's what I found by doing a little web surfing here.
Browsing.
Yeah, there you go. And again, questions, comments, recipes. We got about 5-6 minutes left. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Have you done a lot of making of your own pasta? I know
yes.
this is something.
Yes,
sort of,
I do.
Sort of different.
I
do
like making pasta. in fact, I have it. I don't have it in my house right now, but because I redid the kitchen. But I got some Chinese chopsticks, and underneath the counter,
you drilled.
I drilled holes, And I could poke the chopsticks in there and hang the spaghetti over it to dry. That was my drying rack.
And I know somebody, was it Julia Child who used to do that years and years ago, did something that
thing?
On
a
that
broom,
thing.
Wasn't it?
Oh, okay. So I somehow remembered somebody else doing something like that. And I have a little wooden rack, you know, invented to do that. It looks like kind of like a tree.
Oh, well,
and it's got branches,
does, yeah.
And then you hang the stuff off of that. But this was the more sort of a direct. You have a permanent place there. You just put your sticks in there and you hang it. You hang the pasta on.
Right.
Let's talk with somebody else here. Someone calling from near Robinson, Illinois. On a cell phone. This is line number 4. Hello.
Hi. I was just calling in. I was listening to your talk show on my way home from Vincennes, and I wanted to tell you that both of you folks are correct on the derivation of the word pan, because actually both French and Portuguese are Latin-based or Romance languages.
Yes, yes.
And the P-A-N comes from the Latin.
Well, Julius Caesar, we need you.
She called, she conquered, she gave us the answer.
Oh, that's very good. Well, I kind of suspected that.
Yeah, you can both take credit.
Good.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. It's an interesting show.
It is. We're getting a lot of we're getting exactly what I was looking for, the variations that people have done that go way beyond the recipes that I have collected before. And
right.
I like that very much. Thank you.
Mom's mac and cheese was just so basic because she just cooked the macaroni, drained it, added some condensed milk.
Yes.
And some homemade butter.
Yes.
And then she would chunk Colby cheese about the size of dice cubes.
That's
and
it.
And stir it in until it melted. And then she put it in a casserole and put crushed Ritz crackers on top.
Crushed Ritz crackers. Yes, that would have been.
Mother loved Ritz crackers.
That would have been after 1931. Didn't Ritz come out in 31? Yeah.
Yes.
Crushed
she got
Ritz
married
crackers.
In 29. So yes.
Well, you've taught me something because you've verified three others where instead of making this elaborate sauce, it was just milk, and then and I sort of came to that conclusion that mother, I knew that mother did not grate cheese, and I remember liking and seeing chunks of yellow cheese that were melted in there, and they couldn't have been melted if they had been grated up, you know.
Mm.
They,
that's right.
They would. Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. Maybe I can rip.
You have a very interesting show, and I hope you find your perfect recipe.
Well, I think that we've got it today. I think it has come to me today. Thank you very much.
And thank you for the call. See, now we have, years ago we found the secret of the chili.
Yes.
And now we have the secret of the macaroni and cheese.
And you're right. It was listeners that explained those two things to me.
Yeah. So the cheese grater, the box grater that we know, like everybody doesn't, everybody
has one now.
Has one,
yes.
Now. Well, when you were a kid, this was
an
appliance that did not exist.
It did not exist.
Huh.
And as I say, I just intuitively said that when we sat down here that why would there be chunks of cheese in there if you grated it and threw it in and melted it before all that didn't she didn't
she didn't.
It's. I know now. I just know now that make the macaroni, pour the evaporated milk over it, chop up the cheese and put it in the oven and shut up.
Well, it's direct.
It is.
It's definitely, you know, it's simple, it's straightforward, it's direct.
I think I know what I'm going to have for supper tonight.
We'll get one more.
Oh, good.
At least one more here. Urbana, line number 1. Hello?
Hello. Hi. I'm on line 1.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I got an interference just as you said which line. Sorry. Thank you for the show. I'm not a very experienced cook, but I love the white Vermont cheddar cheese.
Oh,
the,
I do
the real
too.
Sharp cheddar.
Yes.
So, but the problem, I've noticed that most of the people calling in talk about Colby and Jack.
Colby and, yeah.
So
yeah.
If I use the white Vermont, it's more granular kind of. So what can I do to make it better?
I suppose it is a little more granular. In fact, I have that cheese. I like it very, very much. I get it out at Sam's, good one from Sam's. And I have that around the house all the time. And I myself have been trying to think about, well, I wonder if I could use a white cheddar. And I don't know if I made something didn't work. And I was disappointed in it. And I don't know what it was. I think it was the color. I mean, you put white cheese and white macaroni together, and you got white. And I think I was disappointed in the color. I think that real good cheese just didn't want to be made into a sauce.
It's not a melt. It doesn't melt.
No,
quite
it doesn't
right.
melt. No, it gets really granular. Yeah. And I wondered if it could be combined with another. If I combined it with Jack or something, would that help? Or no.
Well, I think that's something to try and think about. I believe you're on the right idea, because the mixtures of cheese certainly would change the quality of what you're going to get, the mixtures. Of course, I don't shy away from that, but they're always so complicated, and I don't have any of them, you know. I don't have a lot of cheeses lying around, and I know Mother just only had Colby.
Okay.
So, someone said they'd use Swiss. Or did you say you'd use Swiss cheese, Dave?
No, it must have been somebody.
Swiss cheese. Swiss cheese works funny. It just, of course, it doesn't have very much salt in it, which is why I like the Swiss cheese, because it's very low in salt, but it doesn't have a lot of punch and flavor, so I've avoided that. But I would think. You know, maybe with the white cheese, maybe a Gruyere would, because that'll melt real good. It might help the white cheddar.
Help the cheddar. That's a great idea. Those two would be complementary.
Yes, they would. They would, wouldn't
they? Oh, okay. I'll try that next time.
Good.
I don't mind the color, and actually, they it is a lack of color. That's kind of the way they do it up at Panera's. I've noticed it's a white sauce.
Oh, really? Yes.
But it does look a little odd. But I like the flavor.
Good for you.
All right. Thanks. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Well, we're going to have to stop there because we've come to the end of the
drat.
Time. For folks who are in the habit of listening, well, we'll be back again the first Wednesday of what month is this? This is March. April.
It'll be April Fool's Day.
That's
something. I don't know. Right. It'll be something.
We'll
like
fool
that.
Around it'll in be, any case.
Oh no! Wait. Maybe no. The first. It'll be 1, 2, 3. It'll be 3.
Yeah.
2, 3. Yeah. 31 is
the fourth.
It'll be
April
4th.
All
okay.
Right. We'll
See you April 4th.
Right. Doyle Moore, ladies and gentlemen, the man we call our chef in residence. We'll take a break, as we usually do at this point, so we can bring you an update on the markets. We'll be back. Stay tuned.